Thank you for joining us for the University of Illinois Press podcast. I am your host, Elizabeth Hess. I am joined today by the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Theology and Philosophy. Prior to serving as the editor, Dr. Gary Slater served as the assistant editor, where he reached out to authors and publishers and attended conferences on the intersection between theology and philosophy. His research has included projects on the ethics of sanctuary cities, environmental ethics, religious history, and comparative religion. Dr. Slater, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here, and I'm glad to get to have the chance to speak about the journal.
Dr. Slater, first, let's start by having you tell me a little bit about yourself.
I live in Münster, Germany, with my wife, Anne, and our three-year-old twins, James and Rosie. We moved here from Austin, Texas last year for me to begin a fellowship with the Alexander von Humboldt Foundation. Originally from Little Rock, Arkansas, I studied history and religious studies at the University of Virginia as an undergraduate, and then philosophy and theology at the universities of Edinburgh and Oxford in the United Kingdom. I graduated from Oxford in 2014 and then spent 5 years teaching at St. Edward's University in Austin before moving to Germany last year. Now, my research background is basically about exploring the interactions between theology and history, a relationship that I've always found super interesting, focusing on the Christian tradition and more recently on the philosophy of Charles S. Peirce. Peirce is an interesting thinker for many reasons, but what I have always found most compelling about his work is how he provides a sophisticated and clear way to explore the relationships between different things, whether those things are two different sorts of conversations, different sorts of communities, or the relationship between abstract ideas and lived experiences. I wrote a book on the relevance of Peirce's ideas for religious and theological studies, and in recent years, I have started using his ideas to explore relationships between religious traditions and ethical challenges. My current project is a book on the challenges of environmental devastation and international migration, with the basic arguments being that these two challenges have to be understood together, and that religious cultures offer critical insights to help us articulate a response.
You have said there are some unique aspects to the journal and its community. Can you talk a little bit about the AJTP and the IARPT?
So the AJTP, the American Journal of Theology and Philosophy, and IART, the Institute for American Religious and Philosophical Thought, are unique in at least two ways. They're unique in terms of their founding, and they're unique in terms of their interests. In terms of the founding, what makes this unique is that, to my knowledge, this journal is one of the only ones, maybe the only one I can think of, in which the journal actually came before the organization. The journal was founded in 1980, 40 years ago, by W. Creighton Payden. And he, along with his colleagues, Cedric Hepler and Larry Axel, founded the journal based on a commitment to develop the American philosophical conversation as a way to respond to social movements, to promote empiricism in the study of religion, and to articulate a robust liberal theology. In the eyes of Creighton Payden, the journal was the most important thing he did. The group IART came about as a way to have conversations outside of the journal, and that itself has now grown into an organization that meets every year, both at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Religion and also on its own every summer, with every fifth year being an international meeting that occurs somewhere else outside the United States. In terms of what makes the journal unique in its interest, it combines a set of American intellectual traditions in a way that I'm not aware that happens anywhere else. And so these traditions are American pragmatism, which is a famous tradition in American thought going back to at least the decades after the Civil War, and founded by Charles Peirce, along with William James, Oliver Wendell Holmes, and a bit later, but not so much later, John Dewey. You also have process philosophy, the most significant figure of that being Alfred North Whitehead. You have naturalism, which is a bit of a broad word, but it, in terms of this group, refers to a kind of liberal naturalism that is interested in how we can understand religion as a natural phenomenon or explore an intimate kind of relationality between human life and natural life of other species, plants and animals. And then finally, an empirical approach to religious studies. And so trying to find ways to investigate what happens in a religious community that you can, if not quantify, at least ground in the concrete realities of one's everyday experience, rather than trying to have recourse to some kind of transcendental, removed, overarching theological premise or category that cannot be verified or investigated.
A lot of our journals have American in the titles, but that doesn't necessarily designate that the content is limited to America. Is this the case in AJTP, and in what ways does the journal make connections with American traditions and those from abroad?
Of course, there are lots of organizations of every discipline that are referring to American in their title, just because it's such a large country that is so important, and 330 million people almost, and the most powerful country in the world. But in the case of this journal, there's both an interest in uniquely American contributions to theology and philosophy on one hand. Like I said, there's celebration of a particular strand of traditions. And to speak a bit more about these traditions, there's a set of kind of shared commitments that come out of these uniquely American traditions. You have the idea that we should take seriously the idea of reality of and within nature, the value of cross-cultural comparisons, philosophical theology as a truth-seeking project, and intellectual life as a form of public engagement. All of these things come organically out of the traditions of pragmatism, process thought, naturalism, and empiricism in religious studies. And the American Journal of Theology and Philosophy is a way of collecting the insights that people have generated along those lines in one source that people can engage. There's a reason why the journal's name refers to the American Journal of Theology and Philosophy rather than the Journal of American Theology and Philosophy, because it isn't exclusively about American thought. It's in conversation with scholarship from other countries all the time. As the editor-in-chief of this journal, I do receive and indeed publish content from scholars elsewhere in the world. I myself am living in Germany and have a network here that is very interested in these American traditions. And so as long as the material is either speaking to or from the traditions that I mentioned, pragmatism, process thought, naturalism, and empiricism, it has a home in the journal. And so it's American, but it's of course much bigger than that in its way.
Dr. Slater, the multidisciplinary nature of the journal tackles theology and philosophy. Can you discuss why it's important for these two disciplines to be in dialogue with each other?
There are versions of theology and philosophy that would resist being lumped together by the word "and" with theology and philosophy. These are venerable disciplines, they're proud disciplines, and of course, you're going to find attitudes, quite influential attitudes, I would say, that would hold that theology has nothing to benefit from engaging with professional philosophy or vice versa. A kind of characterization of this position, a cartoonish characterization, I should say, but one that you do find in a lot of academia is the idea that in some ways, theology is about unquestionable answers and philosophy is about unanswerable questions. That is inaccurate because, of course, they're both about questions, and there should be nothing wrong with having these conversations speak to each other in a way that is constructive and interested in the relationship, not only with these disciplines to each other, but very importantly to me, the relationship of expert scholarship and wisdom and depth and reflection on really important eternal kinds of questions to everyday life.
To follow up on that, it seems that these concepts are very applicable to the world now. What do you think are the most pressing issues that the journal includes?
This is interesting because there's something about these traditions. I would say certainly pragmatism in particular, which is inherently interested in the democratic experiences of a wider public than just a kind of elite set of scholars only talking to each other. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not interested in publishing expert investigations of classical figures like Josiah Royce or Charles Peirce or William James or anyone. In fact, in the forthcoming issue, we have an excellent article coming out from Richard Atkins, which does a really deep dive into Josiah Royce's relationship with Peirce and how this can benefit us from reading them together in a certain way. But that being said, I think from the very beginning, certainly you find this in John Dewey, who developed his whole career in some ways to this. You have a public relevance, a sense in which philosophy has an obligation, perhaps, to look at society and its problems and try to provide resources for how we can think about these problems, perhaps in a way that even other disciplines wouldn't be able to do. I just came across a really, really nice line from a book I was just reading by William Connolly called Facing the Planetary that says, and I'm paraphrasing, but it says that the task of life is to become worthy of the events you encounter. And I really like that. Obviously, that has an ethical relevance on an individual level. It's a nice way to orient yourself to what you encounter in your day-to-day life. But I think it's also relevant on a cultural, general level. And I think that as someone with philosophical or theological training, we need to be worthy of the events that we encounter as a culture in a moment in history, because obviously we are encountering a lot. And so in terms of the issues we're encountering that we're interested in publishing material about in the journal, those would include environmental devastation. It would include democratic crises. It would include interreligious dialogue. It would include even questions of marginalization and exclusion on issues of race and ethnicity or gender. And so these are conversations that will never end, but there's a kind of dialogue in itself between the traditions that we draw out of and the contemporary challenges that we're responding to. And I think it's a real strength of the journal that we are equally interested in scholarship about these figures, looking inward and critically refining how we talk about these scholars, but of course, always looking outward at the world and being public-facing in a way that I think is very valuable.
The academic world is changing. In what ways do you see the AJTP can be a part of a better future in academia?
Well, it is changing. That's true. We are in the midst of structural changes in terms of how departments are funded, faculty are hired, courses are taught. The pandemic that we're living through right now has accelerated these changes, but they've been going on for a long time and they will continue to go on. They affect a lot of the members of our group, IARP. They affect the people who publish in the pages of the journal and probably, of course, the people who read the journal most often in terms of how they can attend scholarly conferences, how they get funding, how they can get a job. In some ways, in terms of the different disciplines within academia, theology and philosophy are among the most affected because they tend to face, kind of ironically, a kind of perverse pragmatism that justifies or argues that academic activity needs to be justified in terms of economic output or quantifiable results. And so it's a real challenge that is, of course, not limited only to the journal, but the journal is a reflection of it. How would we adapt to this? What are we doing? And so one thing I can say is that it's really important to this journal that we publish authors at all stages of their career. And so in the issue that came out earlier this year, we published an article from Taylor Thomas, who's still on her PhD at Boston University. And this is part of her project on a kind of a naturalized grace in response to or in regard to cognitive philosophies of mind. We also publish material from really established, reputable scholars that have been around for decades. But there's a kind of a cross-generational conversation that is beneficial in terms of what we can do for younger academics and give them a place in the conversation. I myself have benefited from that as someone who is still relatively early in his own career. Now, that, of course, is not enough. That isn't going to change the large-scale trends itself. It may help individual academics, and I hope we even have the opportunity to publish material that speaks directly to these changes in academia. We have a manuscript that's been submitted that is still undergoing peer review that does have a bit of implications in terms of what we're looking at with academia. But in general, that is one thing, this kind of cross-career conversation. But there is more work to be done. One of those things is certainly to speak with more diverse voices for the task of having the content of the journal better reflect the diversity that exists in society today. This is something that's been an issue in our group from the beginning, but it's no less of a challenge today than it ever was before. I guess I should just say that no matter what these challenges are with academia, I really do feel like it's something to be cherished that the journal exists at all. In my very first year as editor-in-chief of the journal, looking ahead at what I want to do and what we will be able to do and how we can stay relevant, I think it's important that we try to maintain a spirit of curiosity about the biggest and deepest and most important questions that we can ask, questions that touch on the outer limits of meaning, in which you take everyday situations and keep asking deeper and deeper questions about what they mean in an ultimate sense. I think it's important that we apply this curiosity with as many different academic disciplines as possible, things like science and religion, things like history, things like philosophies of language, things like interreligious dialogue, and again, of course, attention to social issues. And I think that it's important that we take those things that I was saying are unique about the journal and its history and the group that goes along with the journal, IR, in terms of commitment to the journal and then a commitment to this kind of intertwined thread of different traditions between pragmatism, process, naturalism, and empiricist thought and religious studies, and continue it and see what we can get out of it. Because it's very much at the heart of the spirit of these traditions. And as I hope, in a modest way, it may have something to say to some of these problems that we have.
Before I let you go, how have you seen the study of theology and philosophy change just within the past 10 years?
The changes of the last 10 years I think of are things that affect disciplines from an institutional and social and political standpoint. These disciplines themselves, I should say, don't change very fast. It's a weakness and a strength of theology and philosophy that they're very, very old. And so the kinds of questions that we are trained to engage don't really change that much in the kinds of things that motivate your curiosity. You know, people will ask what the meaning of life is, I hope, 500 years from now. And it's all right that we don't have definitive and final answers to these questions. You know, they change in response to the times. And so the biggest changes I've seen, I think, are disciplinary professional type changes in terms of the challenge to maintain lines of faculty members. I've seen it in my own time, in 5 years of teaching at a liberal arts college in Austin, the department that I worked for went from 6 full-time members to 3. And there's no sense that when someone leaves that they'll be replaced. There's lots of changes in how education is expected to be provided and the kind of economics that will sustain the process of educating students. Will it be online? Will it be remote? Will it be taught mostly by contract adjunct faculty who teach at multiple institutions simultaneously? Will we still have an imbalance between the output of graduate programs producing new PhDs every year and the dwindling number of jobs available to these graduates? What are we going to see? And I don't know, but these things are absolutely changing and have changed a lot in 10 years. I think even the expectations for one's career that dominated when I was coming out of my PhD have to be shifted. And I think they are being shifted in a kind of a painful way. It's like any kind of adjustment process. You have to be willing to think through and question some of the assumptions you had before. And then other than that, I would just say that academia's structural changes economically and professionally are just a reflection of a lot of changes in our social and political landscape that I don't think are slowing down. I think that we obviously just had a really tumultuous election that I do not think is going to usher in a new era of tranquility and calmness. I think that there's very much a sense that time is speeding up and no one knows where it's going. And so, you know, I'd like to think that as someone who is trained at looking at these deep kind of eternal type questions that I might have some wisdom on knowing where we're going, but I don't. It's just enough to want to try to keep a conversation going and keep people who are curious and interested and with their eyes open to the world to provide a place where they can get good ideas and share their own ideas and see what happens when you bring different kinds of conversations together.
The next volume of the American Journal of Theology and Philosophy will be available in the spring on the University of Illinois Press website. Dr. Gary Slater, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to get to talk to you, and thank you so much for giving me the chance to speak.